contribution to the historical record, allowing the authors to narrate some of the most important and disturbing moments of this period in thorough detail. Where quotations are attributed directly to individuals, it is because they reflect the verbatim language used in interviews, text messages, emails, documents, or in recorded material, or were relayed by authoritative sources soon after the fact. In other situations, this book renders conversations and scenes in paraphrased form. Interviews for this book are quoted in the present tense to reflect that the speaker was looking back on events from a distance. Conversations and remarks that unfolded in real time are quoted in the past tense. In every instance, the authors have endeavored to tell the story of these tumultuous years in our history as vividly as possible, and with the highest degree of precision and fidelity to the facts. Introduction. A recognizable target. Abigail Spanberger and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez were not close friends. Though they both claimed House seats in 2018, an election year that elevated a vanguard of Democratic women, the two had little in common. Spanberger had been an operative with the Central Intelligence Agency before running for the House as a down-the-middle centrist in the red-tinted suburbs of Richmond, Virginia. Ocasio-Cortez, a decade her junior, was an organizer on the 2016 Bernie Sanders campaign and then defeated an incumbent member of the Democratic leadership, campaigning as a socialist in New York City. In some respects, the two women represented the enormous gulf within the Democratic Party, separating the young left-wingers who made up the party's grassroots from the moderate suburban constituencies whose votes had delivered Democrats a majority in the House in 2018 and then elected Joe Biden to the presidency. But in the first days of 2021, Spanberger and Ocasio-Cortez were not thinking much about their differences. Spanberger placed a call to her colleague on a more urgent subject. In just a few days, Congress would be tasked with certifying the results of the 2020 election. In a normal year, it was a pro forma exercise. The popular vote had already been tallied, and the Electoral College had carried out its arcane duties in the middle of December. The role of the House and Senate was mostly ornamental. Things were shaping up differently this year. President Donald Trump had refused to concede the election, and he had instead spent the two previous months peddling increasingly outlandish conspiracy theories about election fraud. His complaints were ungrounded, in fact, and lawsuits brought on his behalf had been all but laughed out of court. But many of his followers had bought into Trump's claims, and a good number of them were planning to gather in Washington for a demonstration outside the Capitol on January 6th. The president was clinging to a bogus theory that his obsequious vice president, Mike Pence, could use his status as the presiding officer in the Senate to block certification of the election. As a former intelligence officer, Spanberger was concerned about the possibility of violence, particularly violence targeting her fellow Democrats, and most especially, the handful of highly recognizable progressive women who had been demonized by the right. She reached out to Ocasio-Cortez to urge her to take some unusual precautions, counseling an American lawmaker to approach the physical space of the Capitol and the ritual of certifying a free and fair election with the same caution she may have used with an intelligence asset in a dangerous foreign country. "You are a very recognizable target," Spanberger recalls telling Ocasio-Cortez. "Drive to work and make sure that you dress in a way where you are as less recognizable as you could possibly be. Wear sneakers, dress down, don't look like you." That extraordinary conversation was one of many rippling through Congress in those tense days before January 6th. In the aftermath of the insurrection, it would become clear that the national security apparatus of the United States and the police leaders responsible for defending the Capitol had failed to anticipate and prepare for the scale of the threat at hand. But to the lawmakers charged with completing the transfer of power between presidents, the mood of menace was pervasive. To them, it was apparent enough that the basic institutions of American democracy had been strained almost to the breaking point. In late December, Maxine Waters, the senior Democrat from Los Angeles, had spoken up on a video call with other lawmakers to inquire about security measures for January 6th. Waters, one of the most recognizable black women in Congress and a frequent target of the conservative media,